Welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith. Now, we want to apologize, obviously, for not being here last week. We ran into just the worst tech difficulties. Our show sounded like just like awful radio static. It reminded me of, like, in zombie movies, when they're trying to find something on the dial, and you can hear a faint conversation behind a lot of radio static. That was our show. I feel like we should farm it out to, like, The Walking Dead.
That's just radio noises.
But, like, really bad reception. Anyways, we are running on all pistons firing A-OK this week. Now, what was the first gay movie you watched? This has been a conversation that has shook Reddit to its core. What was the first thing you... I had to think about it for
me.
What was
too.
The first one you watched?
So... I am, in many ways, I am a gay stereotype that doesn't exist anymore. So I grew up with a lot of camp cinema. Like, with my mom, I would watch, like, bad 1960s kung fu movies, 70s blaxploitation movies. My mom made me watch Rodan versus Godzilla. We watched Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, all that. And all of this is context, which makes sense for why when I was, like, 9, I think, I watched... Glenn or Glenda from infamously bad director Ed Wood, the guy who made Plan 9 from Outer Space, which used to be considered the worst movie in history until Tommy Wiseau's The Room was made. And Glenn or Glenda, when it came out, was very progressive. But if you watch it now, it's just cringe. And I'm not talking about the cinematography. The cinematography was cringe the day it was made. Like, even the people on set, because Ed Wood famously never did two takes. So if there was a take and somebody walked into the wall or something, then he would just leave it in. So it was, he was deeply incompetent as a director. Very passionate man. Like, when you watch his movies, they're definitely passion projects, but not very competent. And he was a heterosexual transvestite.
Okay, trans man.
Yeah. And Glenn or Glenda is about the whole trans spectrum. It's about, like, transsexuals and transvestites. And, like, you know, some of them are doing it for identity reasons. Some of them are doing it because, considering the age it came out, it was, like, even doctors weren't familiar with the trans spectrum at that time. And, like, this was years ahead of its time, but it was still, like, really, really, really cringy. And I think probably the second queer movie that I saw that wasn't a bad documentary, it would have been probably just some John Waters movie or another.
Pink Flamingos or something.
I don't think I saw Pink Flamingos until I was, like, 19, and that was probably 20 years too early. I think it would have been, does Pecker count as a gay movie? I don't know.
It's got, if it's anything by John Waters, I think that
indirectly it's queer content. Yeah.
So for me, I really struggled with this one. The one that kind of jumps out at me was Prayers for Bobby, which even to this day will just make me cry.
But was it the first?
But I don't know if it was the first. It's a beautiful, amazing film. It's got Sigourney Weaver in it.
Okay.
And it's about a woman who created PFLAG, Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. But that may not have been the first one. I'm trying to think if maybe it was, like, Philadelphia with Tom Hanks and Antonio Banderas.
I actually know what the first feature-length movie I saw was. It was a Hong Kong movie called Happy Together.
Okay.
But anyway, so not, like, Broken Hearts Club or...
No, I think I missed a lot of those.
Torch Song Trilogy.
When I first came out, you know, I was... I'm thinking, you know, I kind of really explored my sexual identity when I was in university. So I would have been 18, 19.
Right.
And, of course, that was right when, like, LimeWire came out and torrenting just became a thing.
Right.
And the university had no idea how to deal with the fact that all of its data was being drained by the residence buildings.
Yes.
And people torrenting en masse. And I think I downloaded all the classic gay movies. I think I have a collection of, like, 30 or 40 of them on a hard drive somewhere.
Okay.
Like, you know, Breakfast with Scott, for example.
I have that on. I actually paid money to get, like,
an actual DVD.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a lot of those. And I think in my late teens, early 20s, I did a lot of the cultural research for being a gay man in North America.
So I would say, if I were to recommend an unexpected movie, mm-hmm, it's a 2008 movie, I think, that's simply called Cthulhu. And okay. The main character...
Isn't that this flying spaghetti monster, blessed be his appendages?
No, it's the creature that the flying spaghetti monster is based on.
Oh, I see, right, yes.
But Cthulhu is actually not in the movie, but it is a Lovecraftian story, and the main character is a gay man, and he's from... If you're familiar with the Cthulhu mythos at all, there's, like, these deep ones, these, like, frog men who live in the water who, like, secretly control society and all that kind of thing. And the only reason why this main character is not under the influence of the deep ones who make you go crazy is because when he was 16, he ran away from home because he was gay. So they made... It's fundamentally a suspense cosmic horror story where the main character is gay, and it's a relevant plot point. That's why he left town before they could brainwash him. But it's really fundamentally just about the horror of it. It's and I kind of like that idea of it's not about the fact that he's gay. The fact that he's gay is relevant to the story, and it motivates a lot of things, and it makes a lot of things make sense where it would be hard to write that story without the main character being gay, but it's not about the gayness. And yeah. I think I like movies about the queer experience, about, you know, being single and having troubles meeting guys, and or like heartbreaking stories about living in the age of HIV. And
yeah,
I actually recently...
Oh my God, so many movies in the 90s and 2000s
yeah.
about various characters who then die of AIDS.
Yeah.
Like that's just it.
There's a lot of them, yeah.
It's a whole genre.
This was a movie that was not about being gay, but they just had a gay man in it where his gayness was important, but it wasn't about that. It was like he came back to town, and it was a small town, and everyone's like, oh, that's the gay one who ran away. And they're like, oh, 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 oh. And then there's other people who are like, yeah, but we went to school with him. Leave him alone. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, I don't know, but it was just, and it was a pretty good cosmic horror movie. It's not as good as The Mouth of Madness, which has no gay characters in it, unfortunately.
Well, tell us what your, if you have ever seen a gay movie, what your first and what your favorite was. We'd love to hear. At Talk Can Queer.
Or if there's a hidden gem that not many people have seen.
Yeah, absolutely.
And don't say Debs.
Yeah.
Debs is not a good movie. It is a nostalgic movie. It is a fun movie, but it is not a good movie.
You can reach out to us at Talk Can Queer on Facebook and Twitter, or info@queer.news if you have any suggestions. Now, we're going to move on a little bit. Now, you know that I adore Shawn Mendes. What I want to talk about is, you know, he's very much a bit of a darling of the new Canadian darling, the sort of... well, I wanted to bring it up because Shawn Mendes got all of the news, and there was a lot of flack against him recently because he refused to help a young fan come out. So he was at a gig... and a fan said, if I phone my parents, would you mind telling them I'm a lesbian? And Shawn Mendes said no.
Mm.
Well, what he actually said was that he would have, like, at the end of the day, Shawn Mendes, although we hear his music, maybe you've seen an interview or two, he's a perfect stranger.
Like,
you know, you don't know Shawn Mendes. Yeah. If you do know Shawn Mendes, hit us up at Talk Can Queer just for the connect. But if you, you know, people don't know Shawn Mendes. And like, this is such a personal thing.
Yeah.
You know, that coming out. So can you just imagine going up to a random stranger in the street and being like, do you mind telling my loved one I'm a homosexual? And he's like, not only would it be odd and bizarre to have a complete stranger out their child, but also it would have nowhere near the same impact as if the child themselves,
you
know, actually out. So I was on Team Shawn Mendes with this, not just because of I genuinely like him.
So this is something that's known as parasocial contact, if I remember the theory correctly. And parasocial is where the audience knows you well because you're a public figure. So like people like YouTubers and celebrities and people with millions of hours of interviews or whatever online where their audience knows them very well, but it's a 100% one-way direction.
Mm-hmm.
And people frequently lose sight of perspective and reality, and they forget that the person that they know everything about doesn't even know that they exist. And this is a very, very, very modern issue. Because like even back in the day when you had kings and everybody knew who the king was, you didn't know who the king was.
Yeah.
You didn't know what their favorite flavor of ice cream was or any of that. You didn't know what their mannerisms were.
I mean, I think the exception to that is us. We have hundreds of hours of show and production and radio, but we know all of our listeners at a fundamental... I'm talking to you, Sue, and Frank, I can see you. We know you both deeply and intuitively. We are on Team Sue, and we're on Team Frank and Bill and Bob and other names that I can't think of right now.
I'm yet to get fan anything, except there's that one time we were in the conference... And every so often, I'd just be walking across, like, it wasn't York. What campus were we at? It was
Ryerson.
I was walking across Ryerson campus, and somebody would just yell out, "Are you Sebastian?" I'd be like, "How do you know?" And it was weird. It was really weird.
It's always, and I think you're right with that sort of parasocial, whatever it was.
Yeah.
But, you know, the idea of you do get to know somebody to a degree. You know, we've ummed and ahed and shared our positions and our opinions, and God knows what you folks know about me. You know, this is why I can never run for office, because I have said a lot of things on radio, I don't know if all of them would go well with an electorate. But, you know, I think it's interesting because we do sometimes come across our listeners who... You know, it's always really weird. Even friends of ours who pick up a conversation that we had in a tiny room with soundproof walls.
Yeah.
And then they pick up the conversation 2 days later because they just heard it on the way on Spotify. Don't forget to check us out and follow. Yeah. But, you know, and then they're like, "Oh, yeah, I like what you said about such and such a thing." And you're thinking, when was I talking to you?
Bradley's done about that to me that a couple times. I know,
it's very... It throws you off a little bit. But I would never ask a stranger to come out or do something that personal.
It's
and
peculiar,
I don't think it was homophobic. I don't think it was brash. And I think Shawn Mendes did the right thing here.
Yes, absolutely. Like, this is your business. If you want me to say that I support you, then that's fine, because that's me and you. But that's bizarre for me to tell your parents for you. That's not it's not his place as well. Like, there's a certain degree of, like, is that appropriate? Like, I don't know. Yeah, I'm on Team Mendes for this as well, for sure.
We're going to jump to a song. This is Tegan and Sarah's BWU. We're looking forward to their new album coming out, and we'll be back just after this.
Just to be with you, oh, to be with you. keep it all safe. You're first.
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
I am Sebastian.
And thanks for staying tuned as we discuss more gay stuff, which is very exciting. I like this. Chatting gay stuff is literally what we get up on a Sunday to go do. Yeah, or Saturday, or Friday.
I usually get up and eat a banana and a pot of coffee.
I hate bananas.
Yeah, I know you hate bananas. You also hate peanut butter.
I know. They're just, isn't there a type of ice cream that has both banana and peanut butter? Well,
there's banana peanut butter sandwich, which I think is a Canadian thing, because I've asked around and I've met a few Americans who do that, but like nowhere else in the world have I heard of anybody eating a peanut butter and banana sandwich, which is peculiar because like...
Almost as peculiar as peanut butter and bananas.
I mean, well, it's like using... Like, some people even mash the banana into a paste that it's like a condiment.
Oh.
So instead of keeping it, like, firm slices of little discs of banana, they have, like, peanut butter on one side and, like, banana paste on the other, and they smush them together.
You know what? Random aside. I had one of those Starbucks rainbow frappuccinos. I work three stories above a Starbucks.
You know that's, like, a billion pounds of sugar per serving. Yeah.
Well, okay. I usually ask it for, like, a third or half sweet. And then you look at the little stamp and it says 3 pumps. And I'm like, that is usually 6 pumps of various syrup. Holy jeez. So yeah, always go half sweet if you can. Yeah. Or more. When I went to Wales, they do Starbucks a bit differently there. They have pre-portioned packets or sachets of flavor. Okay. They don't do the pumps.
Oh.
So when you ask for things half sweet, they're like, is it less powder? Like what? I do appreciate you.
That does loop around back to peanut butter as well. Cause I have an issue with healthy foods because I acknowledge that like ketchup and spaghetti sauce and peanut butter and mustard and everything on the shelves right now has probably way more sugar than it needs to have. It's a serious issue. A lot of people have been talking about North America's addiction to white sugar, but the alternative is zero sugar. And I would like to split the difference because zero sugar peanut butter is just, it's so mealy and it has a weird mouthfeel. And then the normal peanut butter is just way more sugar than it needs. And same thing with ketchup. There's like sugar-free ketchup. I don't want sugar-free ketchup. I want low sugar ketchup. Nobody is splitting the difference. And I find that if you are a food producer of some kind, please consider splitting the difference.
I was going to say that this rainbow... frappuccino thing is banana flavored, which was a bit of a shock to the system, I can tell you.
Because you hate banana.
I hate banana. Oh. Yeah, even if it's loaded with 50,000 grams of sugar, still hate banana. We're way off topic.
Yeah, we're way off topic.
Yeah, sorry about that, everybody. We want to talk about...
I was going to start talking about banana flavored penicillin, but...
That's... Oh, ew.
It's delicious.
So let's talk about something. There are two stories that came up. And
two that we've chosen.
In both of these stories, the sort of lead character or the protagonist of both of these stories are claiming that people are homophobic or transphobic.
That there's discrimination of some kind, yeah.
And most of the gay media is like, oh my God, Ermiger, is it homophobic? And or Ermiger, is it transphobic?
Yeah.
I don't know if Ermiger is in the title, but you get the gist of it.
Yeah.
And... You know, we've been covering gay news for a while. Actually, I just saw...
Like 7 years or something.
You know the Facebook memory thing?
Uh-huh.
2 years ago, we did episode 27. So it's like, that would be 2 years plus 27 weeks, whichever that works out.
Of just doing Can Queer.
Yeah, just doing Can Queer.
That's 2.5 years because 52 weeks in a year.
Yeah. That's a long time.
You could just say 2.5 years. Plus, there's Velvet Studio before that. Plus, there's Three Gays on the Radio before that.
Yeah, so we've been doing this a while. So we've been talking about gay stuff for a long time.
Yeah.
And a part of that, so when we see these things, so-and-so says so-and-so is homophobic, we're like, okay, let's break this down.
Yeah.
Like, for example, in Britain...
Quite often they are.
Yeah. Yeah. In Britain this past week, there was a woman in the cab... shouting like really homophobic abuse at a passing pride parade.
Yeah.
And it's like, ooh, do they get a free pass because of the religious dress? Like, how do we navigate that space?
Yeah.
In all fairness, the police treated that interaction as a hate crime because she was hurling homophobic abuse. Like, it doesn't matter who you are.
Yeah, yeah.
Being homophobic is not cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Even gay men should not be homophobic.
I mean...
which happens.
If you're gay and single... it's easy to become homophobic.
Other gay men are the worst. That's a true story. But you know, let's start with the homophobic one, because I think it's
to be clear, I mean nicely. That as a punchline. Yeah, not literally. Yeah, but yeah.
Absolutely. So in Montreal, there was this group of gay guys who went to a cafe. I think it was the one that you were familiar with.
Yes, they have Rue Saint-Catherine. Yeah, it's on. Actually, it's not Rue Saint-Catherine. Even in Montreal, they just say St. Catherine Street with an Anglo accent, even if they're French speaking.
Oh.
So it's not Rue Saint-Catherine. It's labeled that on the sign, but everybody just says St. Catherine Street. And for those of you who are not familiar with Montreal, that's like the gay neighborhood, the village.
Yeah, and it kind of stretches into the art district and sort of like it moves through. Like
every good gay district is also the art district. let's be honest here. And there's just this little greasy spoon at the foot of it. Kind of near the docks. So you're about a 2-minute walk away from the St. Lawrence Seaway.
Yeah.
Where you are there. And the community kind of built up around this. Like this greasy spoon is like from the 50s. It is an old location and it probably changed names and changed hands a few times, but it's been a greasy spoon the whole time. And it's this sort of like working class, you know, you go there for your $5 lumberjack breakfast special that comes out on 6 plates, that kind of a place.
Yeah.
And it's always been there, and the community kind of treats it as like neutral territory. Like you go there for your breakfast, this is not a gay club. If you want that, there's literally a gay strip club across the street.
Yeah.
And there is a quote unquote spa around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a place to go get a cup of coffee, get a poutine. It's
locally owned and operated.
Pretty decent, but not exceptional coleslaw. I'm a coleslaw snob, by the way. I will completely fess to that. Yeah. But anyway,
it's on your LinkedIn profile.
It should be. But the basic story was that these patrons were in there.
Let's go from the top. They go in, they've had a few drinks, it's after hours.
Yes.
This greasy spoon open all hours of the day to catch the leaving the spa and leaving the strip club crowd, which is fine.
Sometimes you want chicken nuggies at 2 a.m.
Absolutely. Maybe you just need a strong black coffee before you get in the subway system.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And it's just like, that's fine.
Decent coffee. I drink my coffee black, so decent coffee is important to me.
And they've been there for a long time. So they get in and, you know, they're 4 or 5 rambunctious gay guys.
Yeah.
And there's a cute busboy. So they're flirting with the busboy. You know, hey, busboy, come over here and sit on my lap. And, you know, a few of them say that. And the busboy is not particularly keen, which is fine.
Yeah.
Not everybody wants to go and sit on a stranger's lap. That is a preposterous proposition.
Yes.
And the idea here is that it was near the end of the shift, near the end of the day. The busboy did not feel safe with these 5 gay men, not just coming on to him, but like really sexual, like not sexually explicit, but very explicit things like come and sit on my lap, that kind of thing. So told the manager. The manager goes to these gentlemen and said, here's the receipt for your wine order. Thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
My priority is the safety of my staff.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's worth noting that, you know, it's near the end of the day. You know, that busboy would have to walk home at some point.
Right.
You know what I mean? And not only that, but it's not just even whether or not you have to walk home. It shouldn't be sexually harassed in the workplace.
Exactly.
And these guys were turfed out. and then accused this little cafe of being homophobic
right.
for chucking out gay guys. They argued the sort of gay panic defense that it's homophobic because they overreacted.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, if you've ever worked as a working stiff, basically just any kind of wage job in a mall, in a restaurant, mm-hmm. and anything like that, you know that part of the job is you're paid to be friendly. And some people can exploit that. And I can easily see people misreading an awkward, that's nicer, smile for actual interest. And I think it's very important for employers of locations like that to step in mm-hmm. and protect their employees. Because, like, if you've ever worked in a mall like that and you've had a manager throw you under the bus because there is a jerk customer who's yelling about something where they're completely wrong, it feels like absolute garbage. So, I mean, from that perspective, I have so much respect for the manager for sticking up for their employees. The actual busboy, again, I don't think was wrong because, I mean, I've worked in a gay bar as well. And I've basically, like, had to incorporate maybe I'm going to get sexually assaulted today, even just verbally assaulted as a part of my job. That's just part of it. I've literally had to use a serving tray as a shield. I could think of three times, probably more than that. I don't know.
That was a while ago. And we mentioned this before, you know, that was times. They are a changing.
They are a changing and people are less tolerant of that. But I mean, I think if like the sequence of events mm-hmm. is the right sequence of events where yes. the busboy kind of tolerated it and said, no, thank you, please. And then went to the manager and then the manager went to them and kindly said, like, we're not interested in your patronage if you're going to behave like this. So have a nice night. Have a nice day. Come back when you're sober sometime. Maybe we'll give it a second try. Like, the sequence of events was right.
Yeah. It makes me think, you know, if those were a group of four or five straight guys.
Yeah.
And that was a bus girl.
Yeah.
And those four straight guys told this bus girl to come and sit on their laps. They'd been out. On their ears so goddamn fast.
Yeah, there are some garbage managers out there who'd put up
with
that.
But even still, you know, I think that it is so unacceptable to tell anybody to come and sit in your lap unless it's your child.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Your Father Christmas in the mall.
Yeah.
Or it is your significant other. Those are the only scenarios.
This is a beef that I've had for quite some time that the gay community, when I say gay community, I don't mean LGBTQ. I mean the gay community, the gay men community, mm-hmm. is unreasonably tolerant of sexual misconduct within its own ranks.
Yeah.
And I think this was just a case of they're so used to getting away with it, nobody calling them out on their poor behavior. And then somebody did, and then they were offended. And regularly... When I worked in the bar, I would tell people, like, I am not interested and you will not talk to me that way while I'm at work. And then they would complain to my manager and my manager would just shrug and say, like, kid's right. You should stop. And that, mm-hmm. that was a good feeling. I liked my old manager. Mark was fantastic. So, I mean, I get it. Like, this story is...
But it isn't homophobic.
It's not homophobic.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Chucking you out because you've been sexually harassing a busboy is not homophobic. Yeah.
Being gay and being a jerk are unrelated.
Yeah.
You can be both.
And that brings us very nicely to the next topic I want to talk about. And why don't you introduce this one? Because I think you did a bit more reading on it.
I mean, I did earlier reading on it. Mm-hmm. I've known about it for a few more days. So this is all over... Basically, global media at this point in time. By global, I don't mean like Global Network, which actually is a TV thing in Canada. It's complicated. Anyway, international news. There you go. About Jessica Yaniv, the trans quote-unquote activist, because a lot of people are saying what you're doing does not necessarily count as activism. And other people, like, people are on the fence about to what degree Jessica Yaniv is an activist. We have covered this story in a sense a few months ago.
Yes.
Because...
Well, let's break it down.
Right. So the recent events is that... Well, actually, it's the same story again. It is the same story again, minus one detail.
Is it the same woman?
It, yeah. It is the same woman. And it is an individual who's going around to different, not boutiques, what are they called? Not salons.
Estheticians.
Estheticians, spas, whatever. Mm-hmm. Around the, I think, Calgary area.
It's in BC.
BC?
Yeah.
Oh, that was in Alberta. Oh, that is...
No, there's a Calgary Constitution and Justice organization representing the estheticians.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you've got the story open in front of you, and I'm going by memory. This is the problem. So anyway, going around the area trying to get a Brazilian wax and different places refusing and then getting shut down. There's actually a string of places that have been shut down by this individual. And there's been a whole bunch of news coverage about Jessica Yaniv's other activities, which do not look good at all. There's a lot of stories involving or potentially involving minors. At this point, it is all under the big umbrella of allegedly. And the actual spa stories with the waxing, there's been people refusing to do that. Like, they refuse to wax Jessica Yaniv's genitals because Jessica Yaniv has not gone through bottom surgery yet.
Yeah, so let me...
Some of it is being framed as transphobic, and some of the women who are refusing, who are like, that's a different kind of training. So some of them are refusing because they're not trained, because waxing the lower half is different depending on the orientation of your bits.
Yeah.
And so some of them are like, we don't have the training, we don't want to cause harm. Some of them are like, we are not comfortable with this. Like, this is a space for women, and we're not comfortable with this. And so some of it could be considered transphobic. So it depends. Like,
Jessica Yaniv is a male to female trans person.
Right.
So identifies as a woman.
Right.
But has the anatomy of a man.
Right.
I think that baseline information is important to establish. Yes.
Either pre-op or non-op. I'm not sure about that, but there's...
Pre-op, I think. So here's an example of the Facebook chat that Jessica tweeted herself in May.
Right.
So they're asking about if things are available. Good morning. Can I get back to me if it's available? And then the esthetician replies immediately, yes, but we only do ladies.
Yeah.
I am a lady, Jessica replies. Okay. Then they start jibber-jabbering about the process. When are they available? Yeah, they do full body waxes. They do pubic waxes. And then it's only much later that Jessica goes, okay, perfect. I'm transgender, and for some reason, that's an issue. So, and then which the esthetician replies, sorry, but they do ladies. I think they could have finessed that response. But I think... You know, Jessica tweeted that they're transphobic bigots that are committing a hate crime. But I think there's a degree of misleading there.
Yeah.
You know, identifying as a lady, great. But when you're talking about the physical anatomy.
Yes.
With somebody who was going to be working with the physical anatomy, yeah. I feel like being a little bit more upfront, maybe a little bit more required.
Well, like, as I said, there's a different technique involved. And you can easily hurt, especially if you're putting hot wax and tearing hair out of sensitive parts,
scrotums.
Yes, that if you pull it off in the wrong direction, if you apply the wax in the wrong way, if you use the wrong kind of strip, and you're making the cringiest face right now.
Oh, I have so much cringe face.
If you do it wrong, you can seriously injure someone. And if you don't have the training, you should say, "I do not want to cause harm. I'm going to say no to this." So this is like when they're saying we only treat women. They're not necessarily saying we only treat people whose mental internal self-perception is that of femininehood.
Yeah.
They're saying...
We deal with female genitalia.
We are only trained in certain kinds of physical states. And I think if you're talking about, like, you know, how do you perceive yourself and how does that go into licensing, or how does that go into how you dress yourself, or how does that go into your right to do certain things?
Yeah.
But... There's even like within the trans community, there's a lot of activists who are like, you know, your doctor, your family physician should be the only person with the right to dead gender you. Mm-hmm. Because if you're a trans man, your doctor should not be banned from talking about the potential of ovarian cancer.
Mm-hmm.
This is like the one person who should be able to freely
where medically relevant.
Where medically relevant, yeah. Acknowledge that you have...
The anatomy, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a health issue.
It's a health issue. So, and I think this is one of those spaces where it's like, this is a clean area where you can cause someone serious harm if you do not do it appropriately and you don't have the training.
Well, let's cast our mind back to when we were talking a wee while ago about... The Muslim lady,
yes,
who was asked to a Brazilian wax,
right,
on a trans person.
Yeah.
Now, under their religion, they don't touch, except for the husband's, genitalia.
Yeah.
But women's genitalia is not a religious issue.
And depending on how conservative they are, they're not allowed to be alone in a room with another man.
So, and the courts had to weigh up the right of religious freedom with the right to access services and not be discriminated against.
Yeah.
And I can't remember where the court fell on this, but I think they kind of erred straight down the middle, where they essentially said you can't force somebody to do that.
Yeah.
Now, what's happening here with Jessica Yaniv, it's kind of been like a almost like a witch hunt for services. Yaniv has taken 17 different salons or estheticians to court at the same time.
And gotten most of them shut down.
Well, no, they're all in court now. That's what the tribunal's... Like, in this round, the BC Human Rights Tribunal...
A couple of them have gone bankrupt and had to shut their doors because they couldn't afford it anymore.
The BC Human Rights Tribunal has investigated these 17 different estheticians and spas to figure out, you know, all of the details surrounding it. And some of them are things like Sikh women who can't go into the houses of men and attend and accompanied,
right,
with a particular orthodoxy of Sikhism.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, you know, and therefore they declined, knowing that this individual had male anatomy. I think how that religion defines men versus trans rights of men, I think that'd be an interesting conversation.
Yeah.
Some of them were women who weren't trained on male genitalia. Jessica Yaniv claims that everyone she spoke to provided services for men and women. However, a lot of them have come forward and said, well, no, actually, we only provide services for women.
Yeah.
And I think it really is an interesting point. A lot of the sort of right-wing media is saying, this is ridiculous. There's evidence pointing to Jessica Yaniv having very unflattering opinions, which they've made public, about immigrant women. And that it's almost seen, a picture is being painted of this malicious trans person forcing vulnerable women to touching their genitalia.
Yeah.
I don't think it's quite there, but there is almost a vindictiveness about it that seems to be pervasive throughout the case.
She's been accused of being predatory.
It's separately accused of being predatory.
And I don't know. I mean, I'm skeptical just because I'm skeptical about most things, but I don't know how to refute it. So at this point in time, I am kind of agnostic about the degree to which Jessica Yaniv is allegedly a predator. But I think this, again, goes exactly back to the Montreal story. And this is something you pointed out on break, and I'm going to steal your clever point, is that they are related stories, because this is just someone is LGBTQ, and also they're kind of, you know, not necessarily a great individual who's, you know, wielding the scepter of, you know, the human rights club to basically club you over the head with, you must do what I say or I will take you to court. And I think that there is a reasonable space where people can just step back and say, you're asking me to do something or tolerate something that I'm profoundly uncomfortable with. And this has nothing to do with the fact that you are gay or lesbian or trans or whatever. It just has to do with the fact that this is not appropriate given the space we're in. This is not the space for that. This is not the workplace for that. You can, you know, back off, man, basically.
So the Postmillennial, which is a website, has tons of screen grabs from Jessica Rumpel, who was 14 when was contacted by Yaniv on Ask.fm. It's a website where you ask a question, any question of anybody, and people reply. It's a great way of kind of like, oh, what is that random ingredient I can't remember or what have you. And in this chat, Yaniv was told by Jessica I think they're both called Jessica now. But Yaniv was told by Jessica Rumpel that they're 14.
Right.
Turning 15. And then the screenshots of the conversation go quite explicit.
Yes.
And there is a lot in there. Jessica Yaniv claims that this is a fake account, people putting things out there to disparage them. However, the conversation is very lengthy. But of course, we're not cyber experts. We don't know if it's for sure or not.
Yeah.
But the evidence that we've seen certainly doesn't indicate a very friendly, doesn't look good.
No.
And I think this kind of, either poor Jessica Yaniv is under a kind of character assassination, or genuinely has been targeting these estheticians.
Yeah.
Has held very unsavory views about immigrant women and has been chatting inappropriately to a 14-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to say. But I think at the end of the day, we cannot get caught up here. Just because someone has a religious belief or doesn't know the physical techniques of handling male genitalia,
right,
does not make them transphobic.
Right.
And I think that's so fundamentally true. And I think that reaches back to what you just said.
Yeah. And I mean, I really do think that Eddie Izzard said it, but he had a whole routine about this because Eddie Izzard is, in case you don't know,
is now transgender.
But yeah, for I think 20 years of his career, identified as a heterosexual male transvestite and is now a genderqueer transspectrum, sort of non-committal, sometimes male, sometimes female, kind of ambivalent towards
see where it goes.
Gender identity. Yeah. And but for in the early 2000s, when he did this routine, he was talking about being a transvestite and that there was this weirdo transvestite in New York who they found like sniffing people and they tracked him down and he lived in a cave and he had a collection of women's shoes. And he's like, no, that's fine. But he's a weirdo transvestite and I am an executive transvestite. I go to meetings and I fly on jet planes and I drink wine and I have intelligent conversation. And you can be trans and also a weirdo, but being trans doesn't make you a weirdo. It's just that being a weirdo is equal opportunity. Every group on earth has weirdos in it. And it just happens to be
Let's go even further.
If you're a trans weirdo, you make the news. If you're a straight white weirdo, then it's whatever. You're just a straight white male weirdo. And that's just...
And there's quite a lot of them.
But you don't make the news. And it's just weirdo-ness is... Everyone has the potential to fall into that box.
Absolutely. You know, it's important to note that homosexuals can be sexual predators. But not all homosexuals are sexual predators.
Yeah.
And likewise, you know, some trans people can be predators and out to get someone.
And it doesn't mean you hate all trans people if you acknowledge that one of them is.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Actually, there's I have very few people that I utterly despise. You know, maybe in your life you'll get like one or two arch nemeses, you know what I mean? Like those people who just... Oh
yeah,
and as it happens, this person is also.
I accidentally gave you mine.
Yeah. Oh, who was that? Oh yes. but speaking of Jessica Rumpel and Jessica Yaniv, there's another Jessica that I'm thinking of that is not these two.
Who told you to die?
Yeah. Oh my God, that was a bizarre because we were at the Trans Human Rights Memorial, a very sober engagement.
You did nothing to her.
And well, I mean. This individual has said some really stupid things. And on our show, we just repeated the stupid things she said.
Okay, yeah.
And she didn't find that particularly flattering. But we were at this Trans Human Rights Memorial. And she goes, wow, you've put on weight. And I mean, I'm not a slim figure. And I just took like a hot minute to like, first of all, deal with the fact that somebody just randomly says you put on weight. How rude. But then I'm like, oh, you know, just extra padding for the winter. And she goes, no, it's good. Then maybe you'll die quicker. Who says that?
Yeah.
Who says that? Anyway, but for me, that's one. Yeah. She's a jerk. She's an awful person.
Yeah.
But I do not assume that all trans people are awful because of my interaction with this one person.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
You know, and I think that that's important to bear, that this Yaniv may be out to get the estheticians, may be a predator, may be uncomplimentary to immigrants.
A little xenophobic, yeah.
Absolutely. But does not mean that all trans people are.
For sure.
And most trans folks who want to get a bit of work done will probably be a little bit more upfront than maybe what Yaniv has.
By getting a little work done, you mean a little bit of like
clipping downstairs.
Yeah, not like going to the office and getting the paperwork.
Yeah, shuffling
up.
Them. No, yeah. We're talking about a little, you know, maintenance of the dairy hairs.
Getting your hair
did. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All the hairs did. Yeah. Now, we're going to jump to a song. This is Mika's Sound of an Orchestra. I really like it, and we'll touch on why I like it just after this. This is, like I said, Mika's Sound of an Orchestra. We'll play. Raise it back up, and it flies away. When you smile, violins will soar. When you move your legs, timpani will roar. I can hear it, I can hear it, I can hear it. I swear, all the music you're provoking, filling up the air, it's getting loud. This is the sound of an orchestra. I can hear it playing everywhere that you are. There is a sound for everything you do. My eyes promise I can see 100 people playing and it's just for me. I can hear it, I can hear it, I can hear it. I swear all the music you're provoking, filling up the air, it's getting loud. This is the sound of an orchestra. I can hear it playing everywhere that you are. There is a sound for everything you do. This is the sound of my love for you. Listen to the sound of my love for you. Welcome back. This is Luke Smith.
And I am Sebastian.
And this is Canqueer, home of Canada's Queen Media. I was like, am I missing something? So that was Mika's Sound of an Orchestra, which I mentioned twice before.
I just wasn't ready to come back from break. My brain wasn't there.
Yeah, I know. So this actually, the Anglican Church in Canada, they had a vote on affirming a measure from 2 years ago.
Yeah.
About same-sex marriages. Mm-hmm. And 2 years ago, they came in and it blew through massive support. Everyone's like, yes. It was at the synod and everyone was like, yeah, absolutely. Great, fine. The laity, recently, it was a couple of weeks ago now, we were going to talk about it last week. The laity were like, yes. 80% odd of them were like, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Gay marriage, amazing. The priesthood, or the ministers, I forget which one they are for the Anglicans.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was like 76-77% were like, yeah, woo, go, yes, absolutely, yeah. You do you. The bishops, well, I think they were 2 votes shy of a majority vote, which is what was needed. And all 3 levels of the Anglican Church needs to approve it.
Yep.
And these 2 votes, I think there was 1 or 2 abstentions, and I think 14 bishops voted no. But because they were 2 votes shy, the Anglican Church did not affirm gay marriages or same-sex marriages, I should say.
I think this is just the Pope effect. And by that, I mean the current Pope is as progressive of a very progressive 20-year-old from 50 years ago. Because the Pope usually is like in their 70s. And they most of the popes were very progressive when they were young.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you just... like, gay marriage is inevitably going to come to the Catholic Church. We just need to wait for a current, today, 20-year-old progressive Catholic in 50 years' time
to become, hit the 70s and be a pope.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's just there's a time delay between when society changes and when these old institutions change. Same thing with the Conservative Party, actually. If you look at your average conservative who actually holds office, most of them are either indifferent or they're supportive of LGBTQ human rights. But the leadership are weird. And I don't know if I would ever vote conservative, but there are conservatives out there where I'm like, you're okay, you know, you're an okay conservative. None of those people who I think are okay conservatives are in leadership positions. They're going in a weird direction.
Not all of the Anglican bishops in Canada are old. Some of them are quite young, and a lot of them have...
Young for a bishop is in your 40s, yeah, though.
A lot of them have come forward and affirmed gay marriage.
Yeah,
absolutely. And the Anglican Church, understandably, had quite the backlash. People were... Mm-hmm. Understandably very upset.
Because they have very progressive congregations, generally speaking.
Yeah.
Like, I grew up Anglican.
I grew up Church of England, because in Britain, that's like your default. You get a sticker on your forehead when you turn 2.
Church of England is just... Anglicanism is just the Canadian version of Church of England.
Yeah. So, you know, it's... There was a lot of backlash, and the church acknowledged that it had done hurt to the congregation and to the community. So what they've done is a little bit of a backpedal, where they've now announced that it's a diocese by diocese decision. So, you know, your bishop on a 1-by-1 basis can choose whether or not to affirm gay marriage, which is great. Unless you're one of those 14 dioceses that voted no. So there still is a lot of work to be done.
Yeah.
The Anglican Church, broadly speaking, affirms gay marriage.
Yes.
But there are still these holdouts.
And also the dioceses aren't that large. Like, if you're in the territories, the dioceses are massive. But if you are in...
If you're in the territories, most things are massive.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
If you're in the... way, but if you're in, like, the provinces, especially in the southern parts of the provinces, because that's, you know, the makeup of Canada, generally speaking, you're like an hour and a half, 2 hours away from the next diocese over, and most people get married in pretty churches in the neighboring village that's near a waterfall anyway. So it's just... You're going to make a choice. You're just going to go to this one instead of that one. So, I mean, like... It all comes out in the wash. It sucks, but it all comes out in the wash where it kind of doesn't matter.
But I think what it's done is...
Like, the symbol of it is not great.
Absolutely. Yeah. I want to talk to that.
Yeah.
We are in a place where religiosity, is that the right word? Like,
sure.
Religiosity. People's adherence to religion is on the decline.
Yeah.
Has been for a long time.
We are, I think, the fourth most secular country in the world.
Yeah, and I think it's gonna grow in that direction.
Yeah.
And we've talked before about, you know, conversion therapy and the need to balance having faith with your sexuality or your gender orientation. And I do believe that there is a place for faith in the gay community. This may be more dissuading to the congregation at large who are younger than is necessarily for specifically gay men.
I'm looking up the numbers right now, and I may be wrong about that, actually. Canada is more religious on average than the UK is.
That I would believe.
I do remember Sweden. I was right about that. Sweden is the least religious country in the world, by far. Followed by China.
And unfortunately, we can't dive into that any deeper because we have run out of time.
That's a 3-part mini-series if
Absolutely.
You're to talk about that.
And we have run out of time. We're going to be playing out with Titus Burgess 45, a bit of a satirical take on the current US president. I have been Luke Smith.
And I am Sebastian. And thank you for listening. My friends, what? A big win, but I'm not really sure. No, 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 I'm not really sure. And he can play ball. Come on. That first lady, Rego, was she lucky? Were we? But I'm not really sure. No, no. That I am sure, I am sure. So wake from your slumber, 45 will put asunder. Can't you hear the dance of thunder? I am sure. Wake from your slumber, 45
5, a real nosedive for American lives. Cause he's not really sure, oh no. No, he's not really sure. I'm so transfixed, he's dumb as bricks. A magic show with no tricks. Of the spell he's unsure, oh no. No, don't applaud, he's not sure. That I am sure.
I wish we could bring back Obama, Michelle, Malia, Sasha, all of them lost them. Now we're stuck with this imposter. Why can't we just toss them like we did 1773 with the T and the C up in Boston? Brown folks still under siege, women still underpaid, LGBTQ still underbooed, and this dude known to grab them by the cooch still under investigation. No need for saving face, we are out saving grace. Say your last prayers, red cap wearers, make America great again, never Wakanda forever.